The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. God, my eyes aren't very good today. Oh well. So last month I celebrated my 50th ordination anniversary as a monk. And I don't mention this because I think it was a big deal. A great accomplishment or anything like that. I'm glad I stuck with my vocation, and it's a period of time. It's not always been easy, to be totally honest with you. Time has gone by quickly. Seems like yesterday that my long hair and beard were shaved and I was ordained by River Master Jiyu. We did kind of quickly in those days. I am fortunate that River Master Jiyu was willing to teach me and that the community has been willing to put up with me. That's how I kind of look at 50 years, that I'm lucky. It was what I wanted to do as a very young person, and the adventure continues. Okay. We don't present someone who has been a monk for 50 years with a gold or silver watch. I'm not sure which is the 50-year, medal. Okay, on this occasion, I was given a beautiful card and a gift certificate from the community. I think it's the first gift certificate in my life. I was sent cards by friends and disciples, and I was given some statues. I like statues. I usually put them out at the Hermitage in some nice place. And taken out for a Thai lunch. Okay. Oh, yeah. And I got hearing aids the other day, which honestly are really expensive. And they take some time to adjust to. So if I'm not hearable or I'm too loud, let me know today, because I feel like I have the ocean in one ear. And the other ear, I don't know what's going on. But I didn't think I had any hearing problems until I took a hearing test. That's the way it goes. Okay. So when I was in Latvia in Lithuania last fall, I had the opportunity to go there with Reverend Jean after our gathering at Throssel. We met with the groups in Latvia, their meditation groups in Latvia and Lithuania. And I think it was in Latvia someone asked me what advice I had after years of training. Of course, when somebody asks that, it's like, oh, I don't know. But I replied that anyone who wants to do this training can do it. Okay, if we apply ourselves to the practice, keep at it daily, we will succeed. And we will know the peace and happiness of Buddha. Buddhist practice is for ordinary people like you and me. Not a lot of us are the Buddha, the Dalai Lama, Reverend Master Jiyu Kennett. We're just ordinary people, and that's what it's for. Okay? In Japan, Soto Zen is referred to as farmer Zen. It's for hardworking, ordinary people. I really like that. That really attracted me to Soto Zen. With my 50th anniversary, I was also asked by lay practitioners and monks what wisdom I might have to pass on. Again, you kind of think, okay, maybe I have some wisdom there somewhere. One of the things I said was that our training is only as good as it is in the present moment. It's only as good as it is today in this present moment. In other words, boy, those pages are loud. In other words, we have to keep at the practice no matter how long we have been training. Training continues to be dynamic and challenging. At least it has for me. The Buddha trained to his dying day, as did River Master Jiyu. I mean, I don't think it's like they were, you know, they were fully accomplished and all finished. No, there was more to do. There is a resting place in the heart that we find when we train, when we make great effort in training. Training does get easier. I'll underline that. It does get easier. I really struggled initially. Being a monk was a different way of life. Also, I was 23 years old, and I had a lot to learn. I had somewhat, as a lay practitioner, learned that suffering was optional, which was, you know, like a really a deep understanding for me that I didn't have to suffer. But it was obvious when I came to the monastery that there was a lot more I needed to do in my practice, and that's challenging. Okay. The experience of years of practice builds a strong foundation to be rooted in. There's no doubt about that. Faith and confidence grow strong with years of practice. Along the way, we make mistakes, and we learn from our mistakes. And hopefully we don't make them again. Everything is teaching us. Training, if done properly, will always challenge us. Training is done with other people. How could it not be challenging? It's the type of training we do. It's done with every day with other people. They're all around you. And that's not a problem. We have to keep at the training of awareness, mindfulness, compassion, kindness, and generosity. Wisdom comes from keeping at these things in our daily practice. That's wisdom. Kindness, generosity, compassion, patience. Training stretches us to be able to do more than we think we could do. Training for me has never been one and done. As River Master Jiyu put it in the Scripture of Great Wisdom, O Buddha, going, going, going on beyond and always becoming Buddha. We're always becoming Buddha. I think with years of training, there is an ease and naturalness that comes to our practice. I mean, that happens with people who do something for a long time. You feel comfortable in your own skin and your robe. And I just want to say here, too, I think one of the nice benefits of training is you begin to like yourself. A lot of people don't like themselves. We enjoy the training. Still, we have to be on guard. Not jumpy or anxious, you know, not that kind of on guard, just keeping our awareness up. We don't graduate from keeping the precepts. I mean, that's essential. We don't graduate. The Buddha said they were the same precepts for him as for us. In fact, with the precepts, we take them on an ever-deepening level. We greet each day, each new day, with gratitude, appreciation, and joy for another opportunity to follow the Buddha's teachings. You know, it's kind of like Groundhog Day. We keep getting opportunities till we get it right. Okay, so to another group of people who asked me for advice from the perspective of training as a Buddhist monk for 50 years, I replied, continue to work in your practice on not being selfish. If we are honest with ourselves, we know it's a human tendency to be self-centered and sometimes downright selfish. It's not that we don't need to take care of ourselves and in some circumstances protect and maybe even defend ourselves. Sometimes that's necessary. If we constantly gave away everything we had, okay, we were so generous that we were constantly giving away everything that we had, in the end we'd become a burden for other people because we wouldn't have anything. And you need some things to be able to survive as a human being. If we ran around helping people and working on situations all the time, never taking time to eat exercise and rest properly, we would get sick, and again, we'd be a burden for others. We have to find a balance. So it's a balance of giving and receiving, activity and stillness. Selfishness is when I, me, and mine are our primary motivation for our lives. I, me, and mine. When we hold so tightly to I, me, and mine that it puts us out of balance with other beings, well, that's a problem, okay? If we are not careful, we then create divisions, barriers, and walls between us and others. Mental divisions and barriers can develop into physical walls. We create a mind that is jealous, petty, hurtful, and vengeful, and it can go beyond that to violent, because we're defending something, you know, and we have to defend this thing. Others are to be feared, disrespected, and kept at a safe distance. Humankind has fought countless battles and wars because of the grasping and pushing away mentality of I, me, and mine. So, and as we know, this continues in the 21st century. You think we would have learned by now. But we tend to not study history and see how things unfolded, and then we just keep doing it again. In Buddhism, we talk about letting go of the self. Sometimes this is called no self, no separate self, or not self, or some other things. It's really whatever works for us is a good phrase, okay? And regardless of how we look at, say, no self, we can't deny that there's a person here, a personality here, a something here, not a nothing. Through training, we are not trying... Excuse me. Papers are all curled up. To annihilate a self. That's a big misunderstanding about Buddhism. We're not trying to annihilate a self. We're just finding its proper place and expression. And I'll be honest, I find this a little confusing. So an easy way for me to understand these concepts is the simple phrase, don't be selfish. Remember, Master Jiyu used to say that when we first come to training, we train for self. In a while, that changes to training for self and other. As we progress further, we train for training's sake. So it becomes very natural. We go in and out. And it's just a very natural process. And I think it's one of the benefits of staying at something. In the Buddha's last teaching, the Buddha says, the teaching that to spiritually benefit yourself by training benefits others contains all. To help others, which is something we can do. You know, in Buddhism we say you can help others. We also, though, to help others have to be always training ourselves. Because if we don't train ourselves, and you know, we're just trying to fix everything and give everything, it's not going to be as well rounded as if we are training ourselves. It's not selfish to take time out of our daily routine to do formal meditation or study the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors or just to have some quiet time, okay? If you're a parent and it is your meditation time and all of a sudden your baby is crying, well, then to take care of your baby is your form of meditation, okay? That would not be a good thing. Oh, no, it's my time to meditate, so I'll just let the child cry. To not be selfish is to be fluid and move with the causes and conditions of our lives. Sometimes I miss a meditation or a service because of something that needs doing. It just kind of comes with the responsibility. The thing is not to be doing that frequently. That's where the problem arises. because then we're going to get out of balance. I think the best teachings that I have received in my life come from the example of other people living their everyday life, just, you know, living it by the precepts from meditation, following the Buddha's teachings. This to me is not fancy or verbose. It's practical, clear, and down to earth. Just keeping the precepts and doing what needs to be done in our daily lives actually changes our world for the better. It does. Okay, so I want to read here from it's a book, More Than Mindfulness, Widening the Field of Practice. And I got this from a Bayagiri monastery down in the valley towards Ukiah. Yeah, by Ukiah. I think it's the Strawberry Valley, something like that. The article I'm going to read from is by Ajahn Pasano, and Ajahn Pasano just had his 50th. We're very close in age and ordination. I have great respect for him. So I just want to read a few paragraphs from this article that he entitles, Don't Be Selfish. The other day I was thinking about an occasion years ago when I was still living in Thailand. It's a story I've told from time to time, but it's a story that stuck with me. It was when I went to pay respects to Ajahn Buddhadasa. So Ajahn Chah, who is Ajahn Pasano's teacher, and Ajahn Buddhadasa were two very famous Buddhist teachers in Thailand at the time Ajahn Pasano was there. And they both died now. I had been to visit and pay respects quite a few times, but this happened on my last visit. He was quite old at the time. He was over 80, and his health was starting to decline. I had noticed over the years that he tended to pick up a theme and explore it for an extended period. He would speak on it from different angles. He was very skilled as a teacher. So I asked him, now that you're reaching the last part of your life, what theme are you teaching now? He just laughed and said, oh, I'm not teaching much at all these days. I just keep telling people, don't be selfish. That really struck me. Once you start unpacking that teaching, you start reflecting on it and implementing it. You realize that it covers everything. It covers whatever aspect of the Buddhist teaching and whatever aspect of life that you apply it to. Don't be selfish. Being able to make it explicit in the mind so that one keeps reminding oneself how to live like that. If we really want to be free from suffering and to awaken to truth, then we can't be selfish. We can't be bringing selfish concerns or selfish perspectives. The Dharma goes one way and selfishness goes the other way. They go in opposite directions. This theme is a very big feature in Ajahn Chah's training and the way that he set up his monastery. So Ajahn Pasano was a disciple of Ajahn Chah. That sense of going against the stream of any kind of selfishness. On a practical, social level, in how we live as human beings, there is always an encouragement to see how we can help with everything. There is an encouragement to be present at everything that the community is doing. So their form of practice has a lot of similarities to ours. And you live in a community, you're around people all day long, you do things together. There is that sense of stepping back from selfishness. Selfishness plays itself out in so many ways. There is your normal assumption of selfishness, which is around greed and self-concern, but there's also that self-orientation, that self-protection and self-cherishing. Living together really helps to go against that very ordinary human tendency of selfishness. By sharing community, we share everything in common. There is so much selfishness just on a social level amidst the pandemic. So he must have written this during the COVID pandemic. And in the conflicts that have been occurring in America over the past years. So, that's Ajahn Pasano. Reverend Master Jiu set up a practice at Shasta Abbey for monks and lay practitioners of community life, in which we train ourselves and help each other. We built a lot of what is physically Shasta Abbey. In the rock houses were here, but mostly everything else we built. And we didn't know that much about building. We got better over time. Over the years, people have really given of themselves in terms of here. People walk in the gate here and they sense something, peacefulness. I don't know, something. We're having people come in and do some remodeling for us down below on our property presently, and we had this couple came in that run an electrical business, but the woman just said when she suffers a bit from anxiety, but she said she came in the gate and all of a sudden she felt relieved. I don't know. I think it's the training of all the people over all the years who have come here. It's just not the monks, you know. It's just not the people who have stayed. It's the training of all the people who have come here and given of themselves and not been selfish. We had very little at first here. You know, we had a roof over our heads, but we didn't necessarily have heat. You know, we're young. That's okay. We got by. Some of us went out to work to support the monastery at times. River Master Jiu used to take these trips to the Bay Area so she could teach at UC Berkeley and receive money for that to bring back to help the monastery. And she used to stop by, I think it was the Parisian Bakery. You know, it was one of the big French bread bakeries in the Bay Area, or it was in San Francisco at the time. It's probably not anymore in San Francisco, if it even exists. But she'd bring out back all these day-old loaves of French bread, which, of course, would get to be weeks old. But, you know, French bread, if you keep it in the bag, it doesn't go moldy. We made bread pudding after time or whatever, dressing. It was great. We had bread. I mean, it wasn't, you know, that we... People were a lot poorer than us, but we were poor. The daily schedule here is such that we practice together and that we offer a service to each other, to the community. It's just something we do in monastic life. We're just not doing our own thing. We're all in the kitchen each day after lunch and the medicine meal, cleaning up. And I've heard... some people describe kitchen cleanup as a dance because you got all those people in there, okay? And to not run into somebody who's carrying the knives back to put away after being dried or whatever, you know, occasionally we bang into each other, but usually the choreography is good. And when we have a big retreat here, you get even more people in there. And yet, after they do it for a day, it goes very smoothly. Or it's like the setting up in here in the hall, you know, which has all these nuances. But the second day of an introductory retreat, people know what they're doing better than I do. So as we age, how we contribute in the community changes a bit. But, you know, we can always contribute. Reverend Master Jiu, in talking about Koho Zenji in Japan, said that he would say that as long as I can raise one finger, I can be of help. Well, he was wheelchair bound the later part of his life, but he felt that, you know, that he could do something. And Reverend Master Jiu used to talk to us about how the old monks, I think this was in China, how they would be the first ones in the meditation hall every morning. What did they call them, papayas or something? Yeah. And it's just because they'd been doing that for years. You know, what happens after a while, you know, with us, if we do something that has a routine, well, it's time for meditation. It's time for meditation. You don't have to, you know, get in a big argument in your head. It's just time for meditation. Okay. So, Rinpoche Master Jiyu was so generous to beings. She had this enormous heart. Okay. She was willing to help and teach us young hippies here, because sometimes we were a bit out there, you know. And occasionally we'd come up with some project where it really wasn't going to work, but she couldn't convince us, so she just let us do it, and it didn't work, and we learned. Okay. And the thing about Rinpoche Master Jiyu, she was so generous, such a big heart, such a great teacher, but she had really poor health. I mean, it was not good. And her physical strength was limited. But what she did in that, it's unbelievable. I had the good fortune to meet her when I was in my early 20s. She was like a breath of fresh air in all the confusion of the time. And she was knowledgeable, wise, kind, and compassionate. And she didn't rub it in your face. Because in those days, you know, late 60s, early 70s, people do something for a month and they thought they were an authority. I mean, not really. But she, you know, she had done serious training and she wasn't trying to be the big authority. She was trying to help and offer people the Dharma. She also could be very tough and just give it to you straight on. Rinpoche Master Man and myself always talk about how great we are for that. Her teaching example changed my life. Okay. Through the years of my monastic training, I sometimes come to a place of not quite knowing how I'm going to proceed. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is and necessarily what to do. Believe it or not, life in a monastery can sometimes be complex and definitely challenging. I remember years ago being on the phone with some company, some person working at a company, and somehow it got around that she figured out that it was from a monastery, and she said, it must be so peaceful there. Well, it just turned out that day there was just all kinds of stuff going on. It wasn't peaceful, but there was just a lot going on. So a number of times when I found myself at this crossroad, the quiet mantra arises, don't be selfish with your life. This is simple and solid advice. Okay, if studied and followed, it will help carry you and all beings to the other shore. You'll find freedom from suffering. What more could we ask for? Thank you.